Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the Professor John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. If you guys have questions for John, text him in 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, and we will try to get to some of your questions before we let John go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Hey, I was watching the replay of this about 15 times. Bruce Arians kind of slapping his player's helmet, the back of his helmet. Mm-hmm. He's getting fined $50,000 for that?
Yeah.
That seems a bit excessive to me. I know things have changed and, you know, times have changed and, you know, they used to grab you by the face mask and mm-hmm. whip you around and all that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed excessive. He didn't go up and wallop him, punch him with a closed fist. He kind of like tapped. I mean, they celebrate harder than that.
Right.
When somebody scores a touchdown, they beat the daylights out of him. I mean, this was kind of nothing.
But my guess is, and I don't know this at all for a fact, and maybe I'm wrong on it, but more than likely he's had a couple other finable things involving players and pushes or things mm-hmm. like that. And if that's going to be the case, anytime you have a coach that does something like that, the fine is going to increase.
Yeah. Did you see it, Dave? What did you?
No. You know what? I'm just looking it up right now. But
it is so minimal. I'm telling you, when a guy scores a touchdown or makes a great play, his coaches and teammates hit him 50 times harder than that. I mean, it was really nothing, in my opinion.
Yeah, but also too, I think that what you do is if indeed there is no past with that, which I think there is with Bruce. And again, he's a great coach. He gets along well with his players and all that stuff. But he does have a little bit of a temper. But also, I think so much of this goes to Urban Meyer. I mean, who kicked the kicker?
Yeah, so they're being extra sensitive about
it. Yeah, and they should be. I mean, you got a players association. You got a union. Yeah. And, of course, I mean, if all of a sudden, if the boss is slapping his employee, even if it's light, and you got Urban Meyer kicking the kicker. And I know that. Dave isn't upset about a kicker getting kicked, but again.
Well, I like his comments, though, Dave. Yeah. I don't know if you saw these, John, as well. He said he was asked on Monday whether he regretted making physical contact with a player, and his quote, "No, I've seen enough dumb. You can't pull guys off a pile. We just got a big play, great field position, and he's trying to pull a guy off of a pile, and I was trying to knock him off that guy so uh-huh. he didn't get a penalty."
Yeah.
Well, and I'm not sure when that occurred, but there was also a situation with Carlton Davis where he ripped his helmet off, his own helmet, and they got a fine or a penalty for that. So I thought I like that. And if we're going to break it down like a video breakdown, mm-hmm. I think the fact that he stumbled forward kind of awkwardly, it looked like he was trying to hit him harder. But, yeah, I was been one of those guys that I had a coach grab my face mask and whip my head around. And, I just always thought, like, old man, what are you doing? I'm whoop your tail, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I like that he sticks with it or whatever. But, yeah, $50,000. I think you're right, John. I think it's because of Urban Meyer. Mm-hmm. I think it's he's the one. I think we can just blame everything on Urban Meyer.
We should.
And Colin Cowherd.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, throw him in there.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything stupid from Colin in the last day or two other than the one that he said that, he thinks that the Bears' job is attractive because now you can trade Justin Fields.
John, every time you rip Colin, there's some guy on Twitter that starts lighting me up about you. I'm like, go tweet John. John's the one that said it.
Yeah.
John said this today. I can't believe he said this. I was like, well, then tell John. Don't tell me.
What do I say that's outrageous and wrong?
I don't. He's apparently a Colin Cowherd fan, and the uh-huh. fact that you say he says stupid things or what they take
offense stupid,
to
it. It's stupid. Mm-hmm. That's the way John says it. Hey, really quick before we get into it.
Yeah.
John, you should listen to our Mitch Haniger interview, man. If you go back on the podcast and that guy is an amazing athlete just because of the way he is so thoughtful and, mm-hmm. you know, mentally and everything. But, and all that stuff that he went through in that training, did you see that?
No, I did not.
He did this whole thing where he was hanging and had a bag between his legs and was, you know, doing these different kind of sit-ups and everything. But anyway, mm-hmm. I just – they got Sports Star of the Year coming up here. He's one of seven candidates. The other one, Tyler Lockett, and I'm not sure if you've seen the list of people, but I could see where Mitch Haniger could win. But
I'm still waiting for my invite.
Oh, you didn't get invited?
Well, no. Normally I do when they have it, and you're allowed to be there.
I'm not sure what is it, virtual or in person this year. I'm not even sure.
That I don't know.
Maybe they're waiting, John.
Yeah, it's in May. Let's see. And again, one of the reasons I get invited is because I've won in the Sports Star. You know, because remember, I got the Keith Jackson Award at the Sports Star a few years ago.
Of course, we all remember that.
Yeah, and so it's like, just waiting to see if I get that invite. But with it being in May, and we're not knowing if it's virtual or going to be real, it's way too early. Because normally, what I would get the invite, you know, like in January for the post Super Bowl. Because normally you would have it right after the Super Bowl, the week after the Super Bowl. So it's like, but then also you can understand too, you know, they've got the Olympics going on and everything else. So, yeah, lots of stuff happening.
John's acceptance speech was like Ron Burgundy's. You remember the one that was on the, hey, turn the TV back on.
I'm not done talking.
Yeah. I'm joking, John. Mm-hmm. You did a good job. What's the big news today, John? Anything that you're working on or that piqued your interest?
Well, it's not news yet, but I think there's now the regrowing chance, after I thought it wouldn't happen, that Jim Harbaugh will end up getting the Raider job.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here's the reason. Now, again, today they're interviewing Rich Bisaccio. Most people think that that's not going to happen. They've already put in for other coach candidates to come in. They're trying to at least, you know, comply with the Rooney Rule and everything else. But there was one little small thing. Now, again, I thought the Harbaugh thing was done, you know, when he hired a defensive line coach last week. Well, now, I don't know if you saw it, and, you know, the Bears right now are clueless, right? I mean, the Bears have 14 candidates for the GM job. 14. Okay? So one guy pulled his name out, and his name is Ed Dodd. Well, back at about 2000, years ago, when Harbaugh was quarterback coach for the Raiders, you know, Ed Dodd was with the Raiders. And so now you get the idea with Mike Mayock getting fired that maybe what ends up happening is that Harbaugh, you know, gets the job, gets all the money he wants. They get Ed Dodd as the GM. They get Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator. That puts Gus Bradley in play for the Seahawks. And, you know, that you can see that all that can transpire. But, you know, now there seems to be strong inklings that Jim Harbaugh is going to get the job.
Wow. I kind of wish he'd come back to the NFC West. It was a lot of fun when
he was
there.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, man, that was great.
I sports hated him, but it was fun.
Well, and then, sorry, Bob, but does that make then possibly Gus Bradley being in the mix?
I just said that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking something up.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I mean, he's not on their list of people to interview, though.
Not yet, no. Because again, I think they're giving Rich Bisaccio the respect that you know, he deserves, you know, for getting his interview, and that was today. So now we'll find out. But no, I think that Jim Harbaugh is definitely back in play.
So who would be, let's say Gus Bradley is available. They're speaking with Ed Donatell, speaking with Desai from Chicago. They've got Clint Hurt. Who would be the favorite amongst that group, in your opinion?
Well, I think you're seeing three things that could develop if you know, Gus Bradley is going to be available. Certainly they can go the direction of having Bradley back as a defensive coordinator. Okay, that's definitely the case. The second one is, you know, I did look back and saw that Ed Donatell does have a long history with Pete Carroll. I mean, it goes back to 83 when they coached together at University of Pacific. Then Donatell coached for Pete Carroll when he was with the Jets. He was a defensive, I think, secondary coach.
Yes.
So there is a history between the two, and that makes a lot of sense, particularly too, knowing that, you know, Donatell has that Chicago connection, and you know, that could work with Clint Hurt. But now the third scenario would be, let's say that they don't go Donatell and they decide to go with Clint Hurt. Well, the idea being there is that you know, you get Desai to come over because he's worked with Clint Hurt, and maybe Desai comes over, you know, to work with Seattle and Donatell. But I think you can see three scenarios. One, you have Donatell. Two, you have Clint Hurt, and then three, Gus Bradley if he becomes available.
And do you think Clint Hurt is up for other consideration? Is he considered league-wide a defensive coordinator candidate?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But he's certainly considered, I think, to be, I don't know what you think, but I think he's the best defensive line coach in football.
Well, I think he's a really good coach. Whether he's the best, I don't, yeah, I mean,
what,
sure.
What, where does that come from, John? I mean, because the Seahawks are far from the best defensive line in football, so why would you think he's the best coach?
Well, I mean, look at the young guys he's been working on and developing. I mean, has he done a good job with, the defensive tackles? Brian Monet, has he done a good job with the, with Daryl Carter? I mean, Daryl Taylor, yeah, but it's like he's done a good job with a lot of these young guys.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
Puna Ford? I mean, do you think Puna Ford got helped by him, Clint Hurt?
Yeah, I'm not saying he's not a good coach. I'm just saying they are far from the best defensive line in the league. So in order for him to be the best defensive line coach, I'm just wondering where your position is on that. So
my position is that he was good before this year. They won 12 games with him the year before, and he's just a good coach. And I think right now I still consider him to be the best defensive line coach.
Yeah, well, your point about developing players too. Brian Monet especially, he was an undrafted free agent, wasn't he?
Yeah. Look what he got out of Al Woods.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's like I mean, again, the defense was not good. That's why, Ken Norton Jr. lost his job.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the problems, certainly didn't add up in with the defensive line for sacks and things like that, but how much was that because of the secondary? And a lot was because, again, the secondary, the guy who coaches the secondary, he was let go yesterday. And so, no, I think, in the end, I mean, Clint Hurt's good.
Yeah, the ball was coming out pretty fast.
Yeah.
Against our defensive backs. And look, the numbers bear it out. They were second to last the last 2 years in pass yardage allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was definitely.
But again, how much of that, certainly is because they gave up too many yards, but how much is that the fact that the offense hardly got any plays?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're getting 55 plays a game and your possession time's the worst in football, your defense is going to be on the field more, and the more you're on the field on defense, the more yards you're going to give up.
Well, yeah, John, but a lot of that was their doing. You and I can go round and round about this one, man, because opening drives. They gave up 9.5-minute drives back-to-back weeks. They were as much a part of the problem as the offense.
No.
In terms of their time spent. Go look at their drive chart, John. It's right there. How do you give up almost an entire quarter to the opposition on the opening drive of the game and then say, well, it's the offense's fault?
Mm-hmm.
The offense was a problem. I'm not saying they weren't. They were absolutely part of it. But the defense was completely culpable in this.
Yeah, but also, it's like how many times do they lose the coin toss, get the ball to get the kickoff and all that stuff, and then next thing you know, it's like they're – they get a three and out. That happened a bunch.
Yeah. The offense was not good, John. I'm not making that case at all. All I'm saying is the defense was a big part of their own problems in terms of time of possession.
They've answered that. They fired Ken Norton Jr.
Yeah. So as far as the Raiders go, though, is Bisaccia going to be a candidate for other head coaching jobs?
No.
All right.
Because he's what was his position?
Special teams coach.
Special team guy, yeah.
But, I mean, he seems to have done a nice job in considering what they had to deal with, what they were going through with Gruden and, Ruggs and all of that stuff. It just seems like he earned a little credibility around the league.
He did an excellent job, and he also signed the, stayed in his room in the last game and signed little notes to everybody on the team.
Yeah.
Wrote little notes.
And maybe, it seemed like the players loved him.
Yeah.
And then maybe, in the future, now all of a sudden, maybe his name gets thrown in the hat for head coach after. Because, I mean, to go right from there to head coach, I see it's kind of a stretch. But if he's coaching in the league, now all of a sudden his name is at least on people's list, right?
Yeah, it can be, sure.
That guy.
I mean, again, but I think that, it's going to be hard for him to get a head coaching job, at least in the short term. And again, it's like it's getting later in the process right now, and because it's getting later in the process, it becomes difficult now, more difficult to get something for this year. And so, no, he's not in the mix.
Yeah, and I'm kind of coming to the conclusion. I like Bob's idea of bringing in a fresh set of eyes as far as the defensive coordinator goes. But, you know, Ed Donatell could be that guy. The other thing is he had some pretty good numbers in Denver last year.
Great numbers.
You know, he was top 10 in yards and passing yards, and that's been a struggle for the Seahawks. And then they're number three in points allowed. So mm-hmm. it seems like he might be the front runner. When do you think they get this thing resolved?
Probably as soon as they figure out if Gus Bradley is going to be available.
Yeah.
Because again, it's like you got Gus Bradley, you got Emmanuel, you know, they got a couple other guys that they're talking to. But I would have to think that once they find out about Bradley, and then see if they can get him in the mix.
John, it sounds like the questions concerning Mike McCarthy's future, for the most part, have been answered.
Yes.
Right? It looks like Stephen Jones was on, 105.3 The Fan on Monday, and he said, absolutely and very confident when asked whether McCarthy would return for his third season, and McCarthy, for his part, saying, you know, listen, I know how to win this league. We had a very positive conversation, and the focus is on evaluation now. It sounds like everybody's certain he's coming back.
Yes, 100%. Now, the question is going to be, how much is he going to lose on the coaching staff? Because, you know, clearly Dan Quinn is going to be leaving. You know, I know he's with the Giants today, and the only reason that he hasn't been hired yet is because he's got four interviews scheduled this week. But see, I mean, you get the feeling that Dan Quinn's going to go to Denver. Here's the reason I say that. Denver picked up their efforts to try to get a coach. So they were in New England today interviewing, and they're going to get their 10 interviews done by Sunday evening. And that being the case, they can start hiring on Monday, where you got the teams like, you know, Minnesota, Chicago, New York Giants. They still even haven't even hired a general manager. And so because of that, that puts them in a position where it's like, okay, you know, that'll go way past Monday, because you figure if you're going to hire the GM, you want him involved a little bit in the coaching search, you know, get him back for at least the second interviews with guys. And so, you know, so I think that, you know, Dan Quinn could be hired as early as Monday with the Denver Broncos.
Hey, John, Tom Brady says he doesn't get any special treatment on roughing the passer calls. Do you believe
that? Oh, jeez.
That's good.
No, I don't believe it.
He's funny.
Yeah, he is funny. No, I what's amazing is since he went to Tampa Bay, he is more open and he is more funny, because he doesn't have Bill Belichick going down his neck saying, you can't say this, don't say that, all those different things. And he has been funny, but it's like, I mean, you know, let's put it this way. Name me another quarterback who complains to officials more than him.
Aaron Rodgers.
I think Tom is the king.
Tom's the king. I mean, Tom's always, you know, yelling at officials and getting mad at officials and stuff like that. He's professional about it. He doesn't do anything wrong. But once a call doesn't go his way, you know, he's always questioning the official. So it's like, no, I go with Tom. I agree with Bob.
Yeah, I close second for me, John, would have been Philip Rivers. He would complain a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No doubt.
But outside of that, I'm trying to think of who else we see, you know, with a crinkled up face, hand, palms up in the air, whining.
Dan Marino.
Recently, I think Brady's the king.
Yeah,
I would have said the prince would have been Philip Rivers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, and I think honestly, in the back of these officials' minds, I think it affects them. Just like I think being home and away affects their decision making a little bit. They'll say it doesn't.
Yeah.
But if you have a guy like Tom Brady who can't run, I feel like he's going to get it a lot more. Because remember the thing with Cam Newton, you know, where Cam Newton would talk about he didn't get the calls because
he didn't.
Big, strong dude. But the other thing about Cam Newton is he would run over linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're coming up to hit Cam Newton and he's running the ball in the open field, he might try to run you over. And I can tell you from experience that no linebacker wants to get run over by a quarterback. I can honestly say that did not happen to me. I had one catch me when I was returning an interception, but I would never had anybody lower their head as a quarterback. And I feel like that definitely goes against them. So I kind of see why there would be a little bit of bias there.
And certainly it's not like back in your day, you know, because, you know, back in the day when, you know, Bill Parcells and so many different defensive coaches wanted 260-pound linebackers. That's not the case nowadays. Linebackers are lighter and they're faster. And so, like, when Cam Newton was in Carolina, I mean, here he was, 255 pounds, running over some 240-pound linebacker and destroying the guy. I mean, seriously, it's like, I mean, that's the one difference, because if linebackers were 20 to 25 pounds lighter, and it's, and believe me, if, you know, Cam were any good now, which he isn't, I mean, it would be even worse, because you're taking safeties and putting him at linebacker. And so now, you know, those guys are in the 220s at the highest.
Does Cam have a job next year?
Only as a backup. I don't see him.
But you think he will get, he'll be on a roster somewhere?
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I don't think anybody's too excited about bringing him in. But again, I wouldn't rule him out, because we'll see all the quarterbacks who are available and who get jobs.
How many times did he throw for 400 yards, Cam Newton?
Zero.
I think we determined
in his career or last year.
No, we were just talking about the defense last year, John, in 2020. It was not 400. It was 397.
Oh, okay. Four
against the Seahawk defense. But
was that his best game of the year?
Yeah, that was his last. That was his last really good game. Yeah.
Jeez, that tells you something about the defense. All right, John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill. Download the podcast at 710sports.com. Did you get a look at that video of Bruce Arians, Dave?
Yeah, I did.
I agree that he did stumble. He was clumsy towards him, but I mean, you see him, coaches come up and just chuck a guy in the chest after a great play, or smack him in the side of the helmet. I mean, so the idea that he was doing damage or anything, I don't know if that's obviously not why they fined him, but I thought it was a massive overreaction, and maybe there was something that we're not privy to that was there in the past, but I do like his sort of defiant, you know, do you regret it? No, I've seen enough dumb.
Yeah. Well, I would say this. First of all, that's a really bad look these days, a really bad look. So I think that's part of it, the appearance of it.
If they did that to you in your day, you got off light, right?
Yeah. But the thing that I would do if I'm that player, I can't remember his name, Adams. Mm-hmm. I would come out and go, no way, NFL. I'd get on the media, I'd get a camera, whatever, and say, you know, stick up for your coach and just say, that's absolutely ridiculous. I barely felt it. He can't whoop my tail, you know, just joke about it, everything. But, make it, because I think most people are thinking, oh, geez, this is a guy. And I agree with John that Urban Meyer screwed it up for everybody.
Yeah, it is.
By kicking his
screwed up the coach's ability to discipline their players physically. All right, coming up, two Seahawks newcomers are next on our overachiever, underachiever list. That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to John Clayton, who joined us in the previous segment. If you guys missed that conversation, it will be available for you on the podcast page after the show, 710sports.com. Just click the podcast tab and click on our picture. And you can search Wyman and Bob on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Click subscribe. That's really the easy way to this, because you never have to think about it again. It just downloads for you automatically like magic. All right, so we've been doing this throughout the show, in case you're just tuning in, taking a look at a few different players on this Seahawks roster, determining whether they overachieved or underachieved. To me, we've got two easy ones here, Dave, in my opinion.
Me too, yeah.
Let's start with Trey Brown, who I think you and I are on the same page. We both like him a lot. Problem was, I think he played a total of 5 games, 4 as a starter maybe, I think were his numbers. Played 100% of the snaps versus Green Bay. According to Pro Football Focus, only rookie to play 100-plus snaps and not allow a reception of more than 15 yards. So he looked he looked the part. I mean, we loved what we saw while he was there. The problem was he just wasn't out there. I mean, just based on that limited in a 17-game season, we see him in 5 separate instances. I'm going to say underachieved. Just, I know he's a rookie, and maybe that's putting too much expectation on him. I just think it's about the sample size. It's not about what he did, because what he did while he was there was really good or really promising. but it just, it's such a small sample size.
Oh, see, I'm actually the other way. Absolutely overachieved.
Really?
And the reason why is because he's a rookie, number one. And, you know, the other thing is I don't discount guys for getting hurt. You know, to me, I mean, he got injured. And I'm trying to remember, was it a ACL? Or I remember it was in the Jacksonville game.
Was it a knee? I can't remember now that you're asking.
Patellar tendon injury.
It was
against the
Jacksonville game. It was against the Cardinals. Okay, yeah, patellar tendon. He started three games. He played in five, and you know, one of those where he didn't start was the Pittsburgh game, and I thought that was maybe his best game because he did lots of things. But again, okay, rookie, and he gets hurt, which I don't think you can control. And
yeah, not blaming him. Yeah. It limited his ability just to be there.
Right. But then the other thing is you're playing, could be the toughest outside of quarterback. I think corner can be the toughest position in the NFL. And the reason why is because you're covering some of the most freakish athletes in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, going up against quarterbacks that'll pick you apart and, you know, the Pro Football Focus thing, I'll trust them on that, I guess. What was it? 100 targets.
The only rookie to play 100 plus snaps and not allow a reception of more than 15 yards.
And remember in the Pittsburgh game when that kid, I can't remember his name, but one of the receivers for Pittsburgh, he ran the route for him and it was a go route. And just the way he played it and the way that he tackled in that game, I mean, he didn't even start in that game and he came in and I thought just the other thing too is, I said this, and I got some heat for it. I can't remember from who, but like the thing that excited me the most was his post-game interview because he described everything. It's like he saw the whole thing. He was like explaining, yeah, this guy released, this guy went back. That's why I knew that it was a smokescreen. So then I attacked it. I mean, I didn't expect that from him at all. You know, I just wish
we could have seen him more. I guess maybe I'm looking at it saying, okay, it wasn't like he had to crack a lineup of just studs out there. That was the weakest position group on the entire roster. And you had one guy you really looked at and said, we know what we get out of him, and that's DJ Reed. You had Akella Witherspoon, you had Trey Flowers, you were forced to go sign Bless Austin and bring in Sidney Jones, who wasn't even on a roster. So it's not like this guy just played his tail off and had to wade his way through, you know, all these established stars. It was the weakest group without question. I loved what I saw of him. This is not even about him as a player. It's just about he just wasn't there very much.
The other thing about him is that I remember after the mock game, Pete was asked about him. And he said, you know, I haven't seen enough to tell you definitively if he's, you know, playing well or not. But I'll tell you this, of all of the corners, and I don't know if he maybe included all the defensive backs, but I think it was corners. He said, you know, everybody has had some kind of mistake, some kind of, you know, bad step or whatever. He said, Trey Brown has shown us none of that. So That's pretty impressive. And when it comes to defensive back play, Pete's pretty good evaluator. Pretty good. So
I'm excited about who he's going to be. Hopefully there's no residual, you know, negativity with the injury. He comes back 100% because he looks like the real deal in the small sample size. The other guy, a guy that, you know, I think we spent a lot of time talking about when they signed him, and that's Gerald Everett. And just sort of wondering about the position group in total, the tight ends. Hey, does this mean they're going to commit to getting the tight ends involved? Because they were absent last year. You know, whether you want to talk about Disley or Greg Olsen or whoever was out there, they just weren't a part of the proceedings. It started out that way again, though. He kind of came on late because, you know, we were looking at targets to him and Disley, and it was like, what is going on? You know, you paid this guy millions of dollars to come over from the Rams. You're not even using him. But when they did, he proved to be everything you wanted and more. I think he had an outstanding year. Yeah, he had that one game that was atrocious. But, I mean, he was third on the team in every receiving category. 48 receptions, 63 targets, 478 yards, and four touchdowns. Bad game. Not not excusing it, but overall, if you're weighing the good versus the bad, he was way more good and probably decidedly more physical than anybody had imagined.
Yeah, he was amazing. Absolutely overachieved. I wasn't in love with that signing. I didn't think he was going to be that good. I think more than anything is the message that he sends, even to the defense, is that he's a dog, spelled D-A-W-G, because that's, you know, you need to attack. We need to be physical. And again, like I said all year, I don't think the first tackler got him very often. I mean, maybe once, maybe twice. He had, again, that really bad game against San Francisco. He had a drop in the Detroit game, and it was surprising to me because I was like, wow, he always catches the ball. He stabs the ball out of the air, attacks the ball. Everything about him is attack. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like somebody was described as being a fist. He looks like a human version of a fist.
A former coworker of ours.
Yeah. Yeah, so to me,
so
that's
good. Our buddy Drew Barth is the one that came up with that.
Yeah. So that's what Gerald Everett looked like out on the field. Or actually, you know what I'd say? He's more of a hammer or a sledgehammer, you know. But, I mean, he had a game against Green Bay where he was 8 for 8 as far as targets go. So I just was very surprised by him. I love after the ball that he runs angry. And, he didn't get a lot. He got more targets in the second half than the first half, certainly. But, it was a surprise to me. And not because I thought he was a bad player. It's just I didn't think he was going to have as much of an impact. And I think he's just, if you look back, I don't know how Gabe Jackson played, and we'll talk to Ray Roberts about that on Friday. But as far as, the free agent signings, I thought he did a really good job. Super pleased with Gerald Everett.
I think one thing that's been made abundantly clear is the way to Dave Wyman's heart is going out there and just being physical, no matter what position you play. I think if Michael Dixon as the punter was just screaming down the field and making tackles, you'd be singing his praise. You would just fall in love with that guy. If Jason Myers on kickoffs was out there making, his name's Jason Myers, Dave, the kicker. If he were out there making tackles, you love just anybody who's aggressive. You just love that aggressiveness.
I would love him. I'm sorry. That's what this game is about. All this scheme talk and single high safety and all this other crap that's thrown out there. I mean, it's about being physical, and he definitely was that.
All right, coming up, one NFL fan base is already upset about the 2022 season, and you're going to hear about it when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Albert Breer, who writes for the Monday Morning Quarterback, used to be on NFL Network. He was on with Mike Salk yesterday. There's a couple of stuff. There are a couple of things he said that we're going to get to tomorrow. But this is kind of interesting. It relates to what we've been talking about the Seahawks defensive coordinator. Breer said that you might want to hire someone you aren't familiar with if there's someone who had success against you, and kind of gives an example of what Sean McVay did.
He went back and said, "Who frustrates me the most? Who's the hardest coach for me to go up against?" And it was Vic Fangio. And so he was like, all right, like I got to find somebody who knows how to coach that defense. I want that defense here. And that's how he wound up with Brandon Staley. And then this year they brought in Raheem Morris, and Raheem Morris is from that Tampa 2 family. And, you know, basically they made Raheem Morris learn the Vic Fangio defense. It took some time. But now, I mean, you see what happened last night. It looks like it's clicked. So, you know, I think the key is the head coach has to have an idea of what he wants to do. And it's okay if you bring in somebody from the outside who has no new ideas. But I do think the head coach has to have that sort of concept of what he wants it to look like.
I don't disagree with that at all. But I guess some of that, Dave, would certainly have to depend on your personnel. Like, I'd love to run Fangio's defense or this guy's defense, but maybe you don't have the players to run it effectively. Or, you know, I guess you're not going to look at somebody who's just a dramatic 180 from what right. you do, but in theory, I get what he's saying there. I don't think he's wrong.
I don't either. And I think, you look at the way that Sean McVay went about that. But it can't be some drastic departure from what And look, Pete is a defensive head coach. So that's the other thing you're going to have to consider. But you know what? I think what he's saying, Bob, is that, you know, if you got five guys and, you know, they're all pretty much the same and run, you know, close enough to what your philosophy is. Yeah, the guy that and it's funny, there were certain players that I didn't have a problem with, and then there were other guys that I just had, it was a bad matchup for me for whatever reason. So I think it's the same way in as far as coaching goes. So it's not a bad thought, that's for sure.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, Eagles GM Howie Roseman had a season-ending press conference today and was asked about the Eagles' plans at quarterback for 2022.
Are you going into this offseason with the mindset that Jalen Hurts is your quarterback in 2022?
Yes. I think for us, we got to do whatever we can to continue to help him develop. And how do we do that? By surrounding him with really good players. Players continue to grow. That's a huge part of developing. They grow. How they are in their second year is not how they're going to be in year 4, 5, 6, and 7. And they're also products of the people around them. So that's on us to continue to build this team.
And Lefko, you implied that the fan base is complaining?
Based on what we heard yesterday, right?
You're kidding. In Philly?
Well, I mean, it was his first full season. I mean, he you know, he played a fair amount his rookie season, but this is the first full one as a starter. 15 games. He threw for 3,100 yards, 61% completion, 16 touchdowns, 9 picks.
Quarterback. And he ran for 800 yards.
Ran for 784, 10 touchdowns. Ran for 10 touchdowns, but completion percentage certainly not where you want it to be. He's got a quarterback rating of 49, QBR rating. So I mean, he looks like a guy who's got the raw talent. Is he somebody who's going to develop into a superstar? I mean, that's not a very patient fan base out there. So he may not be in the best situation to have slack. You know, the slack you need to grow and develop as a young quarterback. It could be a rough upbringing, if you will, out there for him. But I don't know. I'm sort of torn on him. We had somebody text in yesterday that was, you know, not happy about the way we discussed him and felt like, well, you put him in the right situation with the right team, he's going to be great. Maybe. I don't know. But this is the situation he's in. So does he fit there? Will he grow there? Will he turn into an elite level quarterback? I don't know. Based on what I've seen right now, if I had to make a declaration one way or the other, he doesn't look like it to me, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it also is, who do you have as a quarterback coach or an offensive coordinator that can put the right things in his ear? You know, you look at his numbers in college, it's almost like Tim Tebow-like.
Yeah.
He was so good. So if you can get the best out of him, and I think their coach is a young guy named Brian Johnson, who's the quarterback coach there. So if you can get him going the right way. But, you know, I would just say good luck, you know. And I would say that the chances of him becoming one of those franchise quarterbacks that we talk about that only 25% of the league has, I give him about a 25% shot at it. I mean, I think he's got a lot of talent, but, again, makes you appreciate number three here in Seattle.
Sweeping the dial.
Now, Ian Rappaport had that interesting report, non-report over the weekend, but he was on with Pat McAfee yesterday and was asked about Russell Wilson's plans this offseason. We'll get more into this tomorrow for sure, but this was just kind of an interesting answer from Ian Rappaport.
He's not going to ask to be traded. He just wants to see what's out there. Kind of a similar situation to last year where his agent mentioned four teams that he wasn't saying he would want to go there, but if he was going somewhere, those would be the teams he'd be okay going to.
Of course.
And I just don't know how willing Seattle is to deal him. My colleague Mike Garofolo reported last week that Seattle plans on keeping him. Does Pete Carroll want to start over at 71? Does he want to rebuild at 71? Like, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing that, but we'll see what they end up doing.
I can answer that question. They are very unwilling to trade him.
As they should be.
Yes. Yeah, and he brings up a good point about Pete's signed up through 2025. So, you know, I guess through the 25 seasons, so that's four more seasons. Is he going to want to start over? And then here's the other thing, too. Let's say you do bite the bullet and you bring a guy in and develop him. Then all of a sudden, you know, he gets good at the end of Pete's tenure.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, he's going to go on to win Super Bowls, but without me if Pete decides to stop. But, yeah, I don't – it's kind of like a – kind of like it makes it sound like every girlfriend that I had before I met my wife.
In what way?
Well, it's just it's fine, but I'm really looking for, you know, the one.
They were placeholders.
And I knew that Shannon was when I met her, and so that's kind of is that really how it is with Russ? I find that hard to believe, man. This is one of the better franchises, man.
Yeah,
this is not just from the standpoint of, you know, it's on the lake, and you got this organic food up in the dining room, and we always talk about Jill at the front desk. Like everybody's just first class, you know, the best, and you know, come on.
Well, really? and Cliff Averill said it to us: the grass is not always greener on the other side. It certainly can look that way when you get used to where you're at and what you're dealing with. You get numb to it, you know, and sometimes it takes going through a bad situation in order to appreciate it, like Quandre Diggs did in Detroit, like Cliff did in Detroit, like Carlos Dunlap did in Cincinnati, and Jamal Adams with the Jets. I think they have a better sense of just how different it is here.
I like how those players, by the way, really quick, they get labeled as disgruntled. When, like, everybody in Detroit and Cincinnati is disgruntled.
In the Jets.
Nobody wants to be there.
Yeah, they all want out. Yeah. All right, come on. We've been looking forward to talking to this guy. It'll be the first time we've had a conversation. The TV voice of your Seattle Kraken, John Forslund, will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.